Hi, and welcome to the Unveiled Podcast, where we discuss all things related to women to help us think Christianly in every area of our lives. Susie and I work and serve together at Harvest Bible Church Windsor, and we both have a passion for helping women live out biblical femininity. Today, we are continuing our Women and Motherhood series, and today we are joined with Rachel to discuss something that really does affect so many women. We want to bring light to the topic of miscarriage.
Yeah, Rachel, I want to affirm I'm very thankful that you're on this episode with us. Last week, we shared that one of the reasons we're doing this is because we recognize that there is just various stages and just qualities that come along with being women, and especially as we approach Mother's Day, there's a variety of seasons that women have gone through, and not everyone is excited about Mother's Day. And so we just thought it would be helpful to have someone like yourself come on and share some of the experiences that you've had through your miscarriage and how God has worked in your life. I've had the honor of watching you move really from some of your darkest moments into a life where you are living a life of praise, and that's a huge testimony. And so I think you can be a great benefit to other women, both women who have had miscarriages, to encourage them and to help them to know that they're not alone, but also to help women who don't know what it's like to have a miscarriage to maybe suffer a little bit better along with those women who have, because I really do think that we have been called to mourn with those who mourn and to rejoice with those who rejoice. And so if there's women in our midst that are suffering, we want to know how to suffer with them. And so, Rachel, you were very instrumental in helping us do better at that as a church. You had called me one day and asked how we are ministering to one of the other women that you knew had a miscarriage. And through that, we decided to get a hope group started in our church. And this hope group ministers to women who have had a miscarriage or who are processing infertility. And it's just been a blessing to help those women to know that they're not alone, that we are noticing their pain, and to also want to point them to Christ in all of that. And so you've been very influential in that, and I'm very thankful for that. So I think it's an important opportunity that we have as churches to minister to women in a very dark time in their lives, right? And to recognize that. And so I encourage, if there's other people from other churches listening, and I know there's women in your midst that have gone through this, I really encourage you to consider how you can minister to them and maybe even start hope groups in your own church. So yeah, we're excited to have you, Rachel.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we welcome you, and we're just really grateful that you're willing to speak with us and to share your story, what you've been through, what you've learned, and we do hope that this will help others who have dealt with miscarriage or who want to be a help to someone else that they know who has lost a baby. So Rachel, can you share a bit about who you are and your story?
Yes, thank you for having me. So like you said, my name's Rachel. I'm 20 years old. I'm a teacher, and I'm married to Blake, who is the student life pastor here at Harvest Bible Church. We met at a young adults event in 2017, and we actually just celebrated our five-year wedding anniversary in January. We always knew that we wanted kids, but we had a general plan that we would wait 3 years, or when I had a permanent contract with the board, then we would decide if it was time to start trying or not. After 3 years passed, I still didn't have a contract with the board, but we started to reprioritize what was important to us in our lives and started to pray about growing our family. I researched everything I could about pregnancy. I went on prenatals. I contacted my doctor. I was eating healthy. I actually remember when I met with my doctor, her saying, like, wow, most people don't read this much about pregnancy before they go into it. But I really wanted to do it right. I wanted to do it well. And I did get pregnant right away. The day that I found out was actually the same day that I received a call from the board offering me a permanent contract. So things were falling into place exactly how I always hoped and planned that they would. I think I read online that most people wait 12 weeks before sharing the news, because this is when things are the most vulnerable, I guess. I never thought that I would have any issues, but because I was researching everything, I just really wanted to do it right. And Blake probably would have been comfortable sharing the news, but I felt that we should wait the 12 weeks. So we kept the secret from everyone we knew, even our close friends and family. Every day I felt like I was just exploding with excitement. I couldn't wait to tell. So when Christmas time came around, we surprised our family and friends, and it was the happiest time. A few days later, we even shared it on social media. The strange thing was that after I posted it, I had a terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach, like something was wrong. I regretted sharing it. I didn't want anyone to ask me about it. Even though I had no signs that anything was wrong, I just didn't really feel pregnant. I talked to a few of my friends about this, and they just kind of reminded me that I was rounding my second trimester and it was normal to feel, well, normal. I even went to my healthcare provider who used the Doppler and told me that the heart was beating at 146. She reminded me that I was in shape, eating healthy, I had no signs of trouble, and I was assured that it was just normal to have these worries as a first-time mom. A few days later, I was scheduled for an ultrasound. They insisted that I come alone because of COVID restrictions at the time. I really didn't want to go alone, but like I said, I was looking for the reassurance. I wanted to know that everything was okay. I really wanted to see the baby, so I went. The tech was young, and she took her time. At one point, I asked if everything was okay. She told me that the machine had been acting up all day and that she needed to go look at the pictures in another room. At this point, I was pretty nervous, but I still just kept telling myself, it's normal to feel worried in your first pregnancy. It's normal. That is until on the outside of the door, I heard somebody say, just rip it off like a Band-Aid. I knew right away that those words were for me, but I was just so shocked that someone would say them within earshot. Obviously, they didn't know that I could hear. But a moment later, the door opened, the tech returned. She looked upset and flustered. She told me she wasn't legally allowed to say anything and that I would have to wait for my OB to call. This was a Thursday evening, so I knew that I probably wouldn't hear from him for or at least until the next week. I didn't want to go the whole weekend not knowing what was going on, so I insisted that she tell me something, anything. And finally, she kind of just gave in and said there was no heartbeat, and that was all she could say. I grabbed my things and ran out as fast as I could. I don't remember driving home. I don't remember what I said to Blake. I was so in shock. Part of me thought that she made a mistake. Maybe the machine really was broken. Maybe she didn't know what she was doing. I felt like maybe the heart really was beating inside me, but not very long after I got home, I started to bleed. It was as if my body caught up once my brain finally knew the truth. Thankfully, I had a friend at my OB's office. I called her and told her what happened, and she acted with urgency, and so did my OB. The next day, I went to the hospital, where we met my OB. He's a Christian and a family friend of Blake's. He was very calm and kind, and he was the first person to say to us with, I don't know, it's hard to explain. It was like a calmness and just a finality that the baby had died. And we finally just felt like we could breathe out for the first time and accept what had happened. And he explained to us that I had what was called a missed miscarriage or a silent miscarriage. So the baby had actually died at 9 weeks, though I carried it to 13. So the whole time we were sharing the news, the baby was already gone. There was no heartbeat on the Doppler days before. I was devastated. It was a really hard day. I hadn't eaten in a while because I was so upset, and I couldn't eat that day because, well, they were trying to get me into surgery. So I was hungry, I was thirsty, I was bleeding and cramping. We were in the hospital all day. I had an IV because I was so weak. Every wave of pain just reminded me that I was losing my baby. I just felt so depleted physically and mentally. But he was able to get me into surgery, and I spent the next few weeks recovering and grieving the loss of my baby. We knew we wanted to try again right away. I know some people might think that you should wait until you're ready or give it some time. And I probably would have thought this too, but 9 months is already a long time to wait. And I knew that I probably would never just get over the pain, that I would carry it with me, and that I would always be scared to be pregnant. I had no answers about why this happened to me, and I was nervous that it might happen again, but I really wanted to try. And once again, I did get pregnant right away. My OB told me to let him know as soon as I found out so that he could help me, but I didn't get the chance. At just 5 weeks, I started to bleed. I knew right away what it was. I learned that it doesn't matter how far along you are. If you know that life begins at conception, then you know you lost a child. Mm. It breaks your heart. This time, the loss was even harder and darker because I really started to believe that my body was broken and damaged. I thought I would never be able to hold my own baby in my arms. I felt guilty for not being able to give Blake children here on Earth. I really just felt the full effect of a broken world inside my womb. Mm-hmm. So this time we waited a little bit longer, and I went through fertility testing to see if we could find the problem. It was invasive and it was uncomfortable. The results came back normal. We never knew what caused the miscarriages, but we decided to try one more time. My OB put me on progesterone as well as a low dose aspirin and instructed me to rest a lot. One thing I did differently on my own was that I actually stopped drinking caffeine, and this is a pretty big deal to me because I love coffee. But I did it for my mind more than my body because I knew that I was vulnerable to the devil's attacks. And if I really wanted to take every thought captive, then it would not help me to be drinking something that was going to be spiking my cortisol, especially with all the different changes in hormones during pregnancy. Every day of the pregnancy felt like a test of faith. I had horrible graphic nightmares almost every night. At 9 weeks, I started to bleed. Blake took me for a drive as we waited to hear back from my OB. We parked at the river and we talked and cried. I told him that I never wanted to try again. We agreed that were we never to have children here on Earth, we would be thankful to have each other. And that was enough. I felt peace even though I was letting go of a dream I had all my life. When I got home, I said one last quiet prayer to God. I asked him to bring me this rainbow baby. It's not a term that I really even used. I wasn't sure how I felt about it, but it refers to a successful pregnancy after loss. So the idea is the rainbow that comes after the storm. As my eyes were still closed, I heard the sound of rain beginning to pour down. It was a perfectly sunny day, so when I opened my eyes, I knew that God was going to put a rainbow in the sky just for me. I went outside. It was a little hidden at first, but sure enough, there was a rainbow. Later that night, it stretched all the way across Windsor. Everyone was posting pictures of it online. Everyone was sharing it. But they didn't know it was my rainbow. It was for me. This isn't to say that God was promising me a baby. As believers, the rainbow reminds us that God keeps his promises. So he doesn't promise me children in the Bible, but he does promise me that he'll never forsake me. And so I felt his presence that day, and I felt peace in the storm. And he did sustain that baby. The rest of the pregnancy was equally as hard. The nightmares continued. I would wake up shaking. I had to tell myself it wasn't real. The baby was okay. I fell sick with a fever more than once. I had an anterior placenta, so I went very long stretches without feeling any fetal movement. I bled again at 27 weeks. At 9 months, I got into an accident, totaling my vehicle, and even her birth ended in an emergency C-section. Despite it all, Charlotte Wren was born March 24th, 2023, exactly 1 year after our second loss.
Hmm. Thank you, Rachel. That is beautiful and real. And I just love how personal God was to you in answering your prayers, revealing his presence in this. And you shared your testimony at church about a year and a half ago. And something that really stood out to me was that your church family really came alongside you and supported you during that time. Do you mind telling us about that?
Yeah, they did. They really did. I mentioned after sharing the news of the pregnancy online that I had a terrible feeling. I regretted it right away. I wished I didn't share it. I've been so careful to do everything right and to wait the 12 weeks. But looking back on it now, I know that God wanted everyone to know. Had I not had a missed miscarriage, had I started to bleed at 9 weeks when the baby died, nobody would have known. I would have suffered alone and in silence. I had the surgery on the Friday, so I found out that there was no heartbeat on the Thursday. I had the surgery on the Friday. On Saturday, I spent the day recovering, and then Sunday, we went to church. I actually remember just breaking down in the parking lot, just thinking, what was I going to say to people when they asked me about the pregnancy? Blake was serving on security that day, so while I sat inside, I had no idea that for every car that stopped to roll down their window and congratulate him, he had to repeat the news again and again and again. I still think about how painful that must have been for him. And this is just a side note, but it really is a picture of headship in a way, because by the time everyone came into the church, they already knew what happened and I didn't have to explain. He really bore the brunt of all of that for me. That Sunday, so many women came to me to share their own stories of loss. I had no idea how common of a trial it was, or even women that I knew for a long time, I didn't know that it had happened to them. There were people who did not shy away from saying, hey, I heard what happened, are you okay? Which I appreciate. It's easy to think, like, I don't want to upset that person, I don't want to say the wrong thing, so I'll just say nothing. But I already knew that everyone knew, and I appreciated when it was acknowledged. We were brought meals, flowers, letters, and cards. People came into our home to pray with us and to sit with us. I saw people who had never experienced this kind of pain shed real tears, like they actually understood how I felt. Maybe they didn't, but it really was like they were mourning what I was mourning. They were carrying the burden alongside me. We're part of a pro-life church, and they showed it, and they showed up. They treated this loss like the loss of a born child, and it spoke volumes to us. We felt cared for and carried during that time.
Hmm. I can imagine that there may have been a temptation to retreat and to close yourself off during that time. To be able to have the church loving on you and Blake meant that you had to be vulnerable in sharing your pain. How did you fight the temptation of shutting down?
Because the first loss was so public, I had so much support. I was able to glean so much truth and encouragement from so many other people. I felt I was very accountable because I had so many people checking in on me and asking me how I was doing. The second loss was a lot more private, and I realized that this is probably what a lot of women go through who are perhaps not as connected in a church. Blake had youth 3 nights of the week, so I was alone a lot. And if I'm honest, I did retreat and I did close myself off. I became pretty depressed. Because I was alone, I was vulnerable to the devil's attacks. And like I said, I already believed that my body was broken and damaged. I had a small taste of motherhood and pregnancy, and I felt like it was ripped away from me. My arms just ached to hold the baby that was supposed to be here. I felt hurt by God that he would allow me to get pregnant just to take each baby. I was right where the devil wanted me to be, alone and beginning to doubt the goodness of God. One night, Blake left for youth around 6. I was already in bed, dreading what the night alone would bring. I felt so afraid of my own thoughts and how I would be attacked. But I had a sudden prompting to go for a walk. It was a really nice night, but still I would have otherwise spent it in bed. I was surprised by the prompt and especially by my own willingness to follow it. I put my headphones in and started down the street. I didn't make it very far. Somehow I fell into conversation with an elderly man who lived just a few houses down. And this is not normal for me. I'm very shy. He was very shy. I don't know how the conversation even started, but we ended up sitting on the bench outside his home and talking for hours. We swapped stories of our lives and the different struggles we faced. He asked me why God would allow such bad things to happen. I shared the gospel with him that night and told him about Christ, who redeemed me and continues to redeem me each day. Even if I had no children here on earth, I knew that I would see my two babies in heaven one day. I was assured and secured. I would be with Jesus and everything would be made right. Jim did end up getting saved sometime later, but I realize now that it was actually both of us that needed the gospel that night. God spoke to me through the words that came out of my own mouth. He used a night that I would have otherwise wasted to pull me out of a pit, to give me purpose, and to add another soul to the kingdom. Now I can look back and I can see the errors I made in isolating myself, and I would just encourage any women who experience this, reach out to others, stay in the Word, and just continue to preach the gospel to yourself every single day.
Hmm. Hmm. It's clear that you have surrendered to God's plan and His will, even when you are in so much pain and sorrow. So, Rachel, what insights or lessons has God taught you through your suffering and loss that you can share?
Yeah, I learned a lot of really big lessons. The biggest one I would say is about stewardship. When I lost the first baby, I was in such shock. I had no words to say. I didn't know even what to think. The words that kept repeating over and over in my mind were just, my baby, my baby, my baby. At that moment, the words of a friend of mine stopped me. She had experienced miscarriage previously and said this to me years ago, before I even planned to get pregnant. She said, "The baby is not my baby. It's God's baby. He gives them to us to steward for as long as He desires, whether that's a couple weeks, a couple months, years, or a lifetime." God brought those words to me in that moment, and I was able to have peace knowing that I had done the best I could with the amount of time He gave me. We hear a lot of teaching on stewarding God's gifts, especially our children. I learned that He also wants us to steward the gifts that we don't necessarily consider good, and that includes our trials. We can let our struggles close us off and make us cold, or we can praise Him through it, we can comfort others, we can share His goodness, preach the gospel, give Him glory. I was reading a book at the time called More Than a Healer by Kosti Hinn, and in this book he talks about finding out his little boy has cancer. His little boy is like very young. The common verse people go to, and you've probably heard this verse a lot if you've grieved or suffered, Romans 8:28, all things work together for the good of those who love God. Kosti reminds his readers that our good is not necessarily what we think it is. The good in Romans 8:28 is God's good, which is ultimately our good. The death of a child might bring about a ministry for grieving parents. This really opened my eyes to look for ways to bring about good and give God glory through what was happening to me.
Mm. Mm. That's a great reminder that we're given our children for a time and that God actually loves them more than we do. Mm-hmm. Have these lessons changed your worship of God?
Yeah, absolutely. Even though I have suffered in my life before, this trial just felt different because it was physical and personal. It was very emotional and very spiritual. The lessons I learned took what I knew about grief and suffering and made it heart knowledge. They changed the way I live and the way that I see suffering now. So one of the biggest ways is that I learned to give God glory before the prayer is answered, before the breakthrough happens, if it ever happens. Mm-hmm. At one point, After my second loss, when I was really struggling and giving up, I became very convicted about my attitude. Does my praise for him depend on my circumstances? Will I only give him glory if he gives me what I want? When I shared my testimony with the church a year and a half ago, I said that I didn't know if I would ever hold my own baby in my arms, but that God was good no matter what, and I was there to give him glory that day. I didn't share that I was actually 13 weeks pregnant at the time. I didn't know if things would work out. And I was proclaiming it for myself just as much as anyone else listening. I also learned a lot about submitting to God's plan and letting go of my own. So I mentioned earlier that I had this perfect plan for my life. We would wait 3 years. I would have a permanent contract. I would get my maternity leave, etc. I never expected that I would miscarry. There weren't any issues like that in my family. I assumed it would be very natural for me. This really opened my eyes and forced me to open my hand. There are so many things that we think we can control here on earth. When I miscarried, I asked my doctor, was it because I drank too much coffee? Was it because I worked out too much? Did I do something that caused this? His response was, when a miscarriage is going to happen, there is no one in the world who can stop it. I was reminded that only God is in control of what happens here, and his plan will come to pass. Mm-hmm. If Christ can submit to his will and die on the cross for me, then I too can submit to whatever he asks of me. And another big one I would just add is that I learned God is enough for me. God is my portion. At times, it felt like it wasn't fair that I couldn't have children while other people could. I know some people listening probably have experienced miscarriage. Maybe there's some who have or are experiencing infertility as well, so maybe they can relate. So many people came to me and said, it will happen for you, just wait, it's coming. This was really hard for me to hear because I wanted to believe it, but I knew that I was not promised children in the Bible. Did you know that each tribe of Israel was given a portion of land as their inheritance, except for the tribe of Levi? Deuteronomy 18:1-2 says, the Levitical priests, all the tribe of Levi, shall have no portion or inheritance with Israel. They shall eat the Lord's food offerings as their inheritance. They shall have no inheritance among their brothers. The Lord is their inheritance, as he promised them. When I read that passage, I realized that God does not promise me children, even if he gives them to everyone else, but he has already promised me the greatest gift, himself. And if he is all you have in life, then you still have everything.
Mm-hmm. That really is a beautiful testimony of just the goodness of God's presence in your life and how that's enough. And it's easy to say that. It's so hard to really believe that and accept that. But I know that sometimes in our trials, it's often through our trials that we tend to be more alert to his presence and his work in our lives. And it's almost like our senses become awakened in a fresh way. And I think it's because we're suddenly so aware of our inability to actually even survive without him. And so like, I'm just wondering, how else have you seen the goodness of God? What are some good things that came out of your trial?
There's actually a lot. After the second loss, when I was obviously struggling spiritually, I remember saying to Blake, I will never be thankful for this. I don't know what good could possibly come from this. And now, a few years later, I can see there's a long list. There's a lot of things and more I probably don't even know about. The first, maybe one of the biggest ones, are the lessons that I learned, everything I just talked about, my own sanctification. I can know that God's making me holy. He's refining me. He's making my life pleasing to him, and he's preparing me also. This isn't the last time I'm going to suffer, but now I feel a little bit more equipped for whatever he has for me next, and I'm thankful if all of this makes my life pleasing to him. Our marriage grew stronger. My neighbor was saved. Like I mentioned, that's a really big one for me because, you know, I just think about what is the best that could come from any trial. How about a soul avoiding eternity in hell, that is probably the best that could come from any trial. And maybe there's been more, or maybe there's more to come, but even if it's just one soul, it's worth it. The hope group formed, I know that has been a blessing to me as well as other women. Charlotte being born, things had just worked out the way that I hoped the first time. I know I would have loved those babies just as much, but I can say that I know she is the one that I was supposed to hold here, and that God selected her for our home, and that changes the way that I parent. It makes me more intentional and makes me appreciate the uniqueness of the relationship I have with her, and I'm just very grateful for her. That in turn makes me a better mom, a better wife, a better friend. I'm more patient. I'm more grateful. You know, in the sleepless nights or in the tantrums where I would have probably normally lost my patience, I'm just filled with gratitude that my prayers were answered, that she's even here. I'm less controlling because I learned to open my hand, and I know my need to be in the Word, and that in turn overflows, blesses my husband, blesses my child, blesses my friends. I'm more compassionate and more sensitive. One of the biggest ones that's unique to miscarriage is that my babies are with Jesus. When we announced our first pregnancy to our friends and family, like I said, around Christmas time, we gave out cards with a picture on it. And on every card I wrote, please pray this baby would know Jesus at a young age. My prayer was answered, though not at all in the way that I hoped. Yet I can know those children never have to experience the brokenness and suffering of this world. I never have to worry about if they'll be saved or not. And this is something that I will carry for Charlotte. These two babies are not lost at all. They're found. They do know Christ, and they're better off than they ever would be here.
Beautiful insight, Rachel. And, you know, you mentioned that your marriage has become stronger through this. And we work with Blake. Susie and I work with Blake. He's our youth pastor of our kids. And how have you guys been able to stay connected through this?
Yeah, our marriage definitely grew stronger, though it didn't happen right away. It was messy, and we learned along the way. We did feel disconnected at first because each of us was experiencing the loss so differently. I was grieving in a way that is unique to a mother who loses her child in such a personal and physical way. My hormones were also all over the place. He struggled to understand me, which made it difficult for him to comfort me. It was hard to find encouragement because there was no explanation for what happened. He couldn't just say to me, like, next time it'll be better, next time it will work out. He really did put in a lot of work as the leader of our home, but I do also think there were times where he maybe felt impatient, that it was so consuming for me for so long. I, in turn, sometimes felt like he didn't care as much as I did because he didn't always understand and because he seemed to be able to carry on. We had to learn to be patient with each other and accept that we would grieve it differently. Men and women are, after all, different from each other. With some growth and maturity, we were able to leverage the complementarianism to support each other instead of losing each other in our differences. So, for example, during the really dark period where I was struggling, Blake noticed pretty quickly that I wasn't as disciplined in my Bible reading. And I'm really thankful to have a husband who is not passive, who would even catch this so quickly and take action. And even though he hates getting up early and probably definitely doesn't prefer my style of Bible reading, he began to set his alarm, turn on the lights, open my Bible, and read to me. Eventually, we would take turns, and we ended up reading through the entire chronological Bible together. For my part, I had to realize that Blake had needs too. Specifically, I needed to tell him that I would be content if it was just the two of us in our home forever. This was hard to do at first because I didn't want to accept that I might never raise my own children, but as I said it, it became true and I meant it and I found peace in it. As a woman, I'm also more nurturing than he is. So for a long time, I would say he was in his protector mode, which kind of made me feel like he wasn't grieving the same way I was, or wasn't grieving properly maybe. But now I can see that's what I needed from him, especially with, you know, my hormones being everywhere. I needed the steadiness and the certainty that he gave me. And only now is he actually starting to feel what happened, feel the weight of it, and to grieve. So now it's my turn to care for him as God designed a wife to do.
Yeah. It's beautiful how you were patient with each other and willing to seek to understand each other's differences and then be a compliment to each other. I think that's a powerful testimony in so many levels. Mm-hmm. Also, just thinking about the fact that not everyone has had these experiences, but as a church, we do want to love on one another in difficult times. And so what are some things that you can share with the women that are listening? Things that are helpful things to say after a miscarriage, things that are helpful things to do, and maybe even some things that are not helpful, because we do genuinely want to avoid mm-hmm. those things, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, it's a really touchy subject, and I understand why people shy away from it, why they don't know what to say. So first thing I would just say is to ask them how you can love them and what they need. I mean, I've gone through it, but the woman next to me might need something different than I do. Mm. So you really can't know. The best way is to just ask what would help them, what would be a way to make them feel loved or supported during this time. Remember that life begins at conception, so consider what you would do for a family that lost their child. We really appreciated the meals that were brought to us. I didn't feel like cooking. Didn't feel like doing much, and it showed a lot when people did that. Just for a practical tip, I would say if you're planning to bring a meal, don't say, let me know when. No one's going to ask you to bring by a meal. It's better to say, does Wednesday work for you? I'd like to drop off a meal. It's okay to pursue a little bit, to push a little bit. Sometimes that's what women need. Make sure your encouragement lines up with scripture. Don't promise something that you cannot promise. Good. And if you don't know what to say, actually just give scripture. Jeremiah says it's the word of God that breaks the rock in pieces. So if anything's going to get to the heart, it's going to be the word of God. So pray about that. Just offer that. And I want to say also to women who experience miscarriage, don't put up walls and don't look for ways to be offended. It's so easy when you're hurting to be offended or to sometimes project, even accidentally. I saw the way that people kind of tiptoed around me at first, or they wanted to be sensitive. And I just resolved in my mind very early on that I was not going to be offended by anyone. You know, no one is malicious or trying to hurt you. They're trying to help. And making that decision early on, like when people actually did say unwise or thoughtless things to me, I could actually just kind of like laugh about it, or maybe graciously correct them so they didn't say it to the next person, or sometimes just let it go. Help people love you and understand how you feel. Who better to educate people than somebody who's been through it?
Yeah. No, good. Very good. I appreciate that, Rachel. One more question, and it's kind of a tough one, but this is a motherhood series and it is leading up to Mother's Day. And I know that Mother's Day just holds with it so many different emotions. And so do you have any words of encouragement for women who have had a miscarriage in the last year or so? And as they prepare for Mother's Day, Mother's Day is not going to get canceled, right? And so it will come. Do you have any words of encouragement or ways that they can prepare so that they can continue to honor the Lord in their hearts, even on a painful or difficult mixed emotions kind of a day?
Yeah, I would just say it's okay to be sad and to take the time to think about what was lost. But I would also suggest not to stay there all day. What has helped me is to focus less on the horrible thing that happened to me and to focus more on honoring the baby instead. So I have a necklace that I wear on Mother's Day and other days when I'm just thinking about them a little extra. We also named our babies. And that was a way we felt we could show honor to our relationship with them. You could journal about it, maybe write down your curiosities about the baby. Were you a boy? Were you a girl? Were you shy, outgoing? Would you be sporty or artsy? Also, just mention a few significant things that my community did for me on Mother's Day. Matt Reed, who many people know in our church, he's served in different areas for a long time, came up to me that Sunday, gave me a quick hug and said, "Happy Mother's Day. It still counts." That was it. It was small. It was subtle. But it meant a lot to me. Some of my friends got me flowers. My mom sent me a card. If you know someone who's experienced miscarriage, a little acknowledgement goes a long way. The awesome thing about Mother's Day is that it's always on a Sunday. The best thing you can do is go to church, worship your Savior, look around the room, and catch a glimpse of heaven. Sometimes during corporate worship, you'll see me in just a puddle of tears. It's not because I'm sad. It's because I just can't wait to see what heaven is like. Mm. All of us together, united and reunited in unmitigated worship of the one who loved us and gave himself for us.
Well, I feel like I'm in a puddle of tears. Thank you so much, Rachel, for your testimony. And your sticker on your laptop is catching my eye, and it says, "Even in the valley, you are with me." And you just have exemplified that with your story. And we thank you for your deep insight into this subject. God is using your story to bring glory to his name. And we hope that any women who are listening, who may be experiencing or have experienced a miscarriage, that this podcast would be a benefit and a resource to help you see God in your story. We thank you for listening today. Please like and share this podcast. Download Beachhead Media to find more great content. And please join us again as we continue our Women and Motherhood series and rebuild biblical womanhood from the foundation up.